across the UK, across continental North America, and around the world on the internet, by webcast and by podcast. My name is Howard Hughes, and this is The Unexplained. Thank you for returning to the show and the website, www.theunexplained.tv, www.theunexplained.tv. Go there now. Send me feedback, send me donations, whatever you want to do. That's the place to be, designed by Adam Cornwell at Creative Hotspot in Liverpool. Thank you for your response still coming in to the new show about Howard Hughes, the man whose name I've carried all my life, and an amazing theory from Mark Music and Doug Wellman. See that show now. It's edition 63. This is a special shortened edition of The Unexplained, edition 63. It is shortened for a reason that I will explain now. We have Richard C. Hoagland returning to the show, American space expert. He is coming within days to the UK with some, he says, fantastic new material. He's going to talk about that in just a moment. Just to say thank you for your emails, thank you for your response. Please keep it coming, keep the feedback coming to me. I'm really excited about where we're going with this show, and we have much more to do. Another show will be coming very, very soon. I need to get this out to you, though, as soon as possible, so thank you to Adam Cornwell for doing that for us. Richard is going to be in the city of Leeds in Yorkshire, north of England, very, very soon. He's about to tell you all about that. Robin's coming with him, and he says he's got images and a lot of material that you need to hear. We're going to talk about some of that right now here. It'll be good to have him back on. So thank you again to Martin, by the way, for the theme tune. Martin, as ever, I do need to hear from you, but thank you for all the help that you've given me. Thank you to you for your support. Let's get to America now. And Richard C. Hoagland, American space expert and old friend. Richard, how nice to have you back on The Unexplained.
It's nice to be back.
Now, listen, I've had so many emails about you. People have been saying, where is Richard Hoagland, the mystery man? Where's he gone? And I've said, he's going to be coming back. He's going to be doing an update. It's going to be okay. And you see, true to my word, here you are, and true to your word as well. I gather you've been very busy.
Very busy. I mean, we've had the end of one of the major programs of NASA, the shuttle program, 30 years. I was there at the beginning, and I was obviously here at the end. And now, of course, we have an unmanned NASA mission to an asteroid called Vesta, which is turning out to be absolutely astonishing. That's why I'm coming to the UK in about a week to present up at Leeds some amazing images. I mean, for some reason, NASA, I think, is about to break down and show us what's really out there.
How do you know that?
Because I'm looking at the pictures. I'm looking at ruins. I'm looking at astonishing ruined geometry and buildings and shattered remains of structures. And, you know, I'm preparing, in fact, while we're doing the interview, I was preparing, when you called, the detailed side-by-side comparison so people who are not used to seeing this stuff will know exactly what they're looking at. But this is the clearest and sharpest, and we're still 3,000 miles away from this little thing. And the closest orbit is going to be less than 100, Howard, which means the images are going to knock your socks off, and that will unfold over the next several months. So this is the beginning, unless they get really weird and they lose the spacecraft through some, you know, convenient excuse.
Not, of course, that that's ever happened before.
Well, but that was then and this is now, and all of our political tea leaves tell me that we're on the verge, on the edge of disclosure, and I'm looking at data which is, you know, I'm going to bring it with me, and you're going to see it yourself, and it's going to knock your socks off.
Well, you presented some pretty amazing stuff in Liverpool a couple of years when I was there. Sadly, I can't be in Leeds to see that. Interesting thing about this, though, that what you're talking about now is starting to be picked up by the UK media. There was a piece about it in one of our newspapers, I think yesterday or the day before. So, you know, if we think this whole thing is a chain, this whole media thing, and sometimes I think it is organized and orchestrated, perhaps the process is beginning.
And all run by Rupert Murdoch.
Well, yeah, for now. But, you know, who knows? That might change. Yeah, that might change. That's a whole other story here. I mean, you would never have imagined.
Frankly, Howard, I don't think that's coincidental. Mm-hmm. Given Murdoch's extraordinary power and hold on so many media, both there and here, and the fact that the FBI has launched serious investigations now, I don't know whether this, in fact, is not part of the whole unraveling disclosure process, because what's the key bottleneck in getting any of this data, any of these truths out to the general public?
Well, all of it always comes down to media control and ownership.
Yeah, of course. So if you crack the media monopoly, if you bring in fresh air and you get people looking skeptically at what they're told as opposed to accepting it, you know, carte blanche, that is in the equivalent of you know, the kind of truth-telling that we need in so many areas these days.
All right. Now, before we talk about this asteroid, which is what we're going to spend most of this conversation on, I just want to do a little retrospective on the shuttle program, because I cover that on the radio over here. And there was a great deal of... I've never seen such space coverage in decades here. Wall-to-wall coverage, documentaries being done, people saying, isn't it sad that we don't have a manned space program like that anymore, etc. Well, of course, they weren't saying that at the time. They are saying that now. And it just seems to me, I wonder how you feel about this. It is an amazing irony that here we are in history at a point where we might be about to disclose something, who knows, and we are getting rid of people with fantastic expertise, retiring them off, giving them payoffs, making them go to find other jobs, but here we are at a groundbreaking point.
Well, but it's not like we haven't lived through this before. During Apollo, which was 40 years ago, and it's hard for people with no sense of institutional memory to think back that far, there was a wholesale, bake sale on the space program. We had nothing in the pipeline from the end of Apollo until the shuttle came online over 10 years later, a full decade. And even as the Apollo program was in full swing in the late 60s, early 70s, they were laying off thousands of engineers and scientists and technicians and experts in a whole variety of fields. In fact, the day that we landed on the moon, Apollo 11, a whole bunch of people at Grumman, and I know this from Ken Johnston, got their pink slips. So we seem to stupidly do this again and again. The good news is the interregnum between the end of the shuttle and the beginning of the next manned or human effort is going to be much shorter this time. The next American spacecraft to fly to carry astronauts could perhaps leave Earth as early as 2014 or 2015. That is not a decade. That's only a couple, 3 years away. So the, as Mark Twain used to say, the rumors of my demise have been greatly exaggerated. The rumors of NASA's demise, because of Obama's vision, are extraordinarily exaggerated, because what he has done now is he has moved over all the low Earth orbit stuff to basically commercial. You know, Richard Branson is a pioneer. Branson has enough money that he and Elon Musk can single-handedly, you know, waft their own manned space effort into low Earth orbit, because all it is a matter of money. It's not expertise, it's not technology, it's not know-how, it's just pure cash. That frees NASA to do what only a government program can do, like the Russians, like ESA, although ESA really isn't dabbling in the manned area at all, and that is go where no one has gone before, beyond the moon, beyond low Earth orbit, out to explore. And there is a spacecraft in the pipeline called Orion, which is kind of, as one of the NASA administrators said years ago, Apollo on steroids. And then there is the heavy lift launch vehicle, the booster, which, unlike with Saturn, where we basically killed all the technology and the FBI went around the country and took back all the plans for how to build a Saturn V, which is a whole long story which you don't have time to get into, you know, when this airs, we're going to be using shuttle-derived technology with a few modern twists because technology has moved on, but there is a lineal derivative. It's called shuttle-derived because it will be derivative of the same technology which launched the shuttle, except it will be capable in its ultimate configuration of launching 130 metric tons into orbit, meaning it can send a manned expedition back to the moon probably as early as the mid part of this coming decade. So rather than lament the loss of the shuttle, we should celebrate the fact that the interregnum is only a few years and not the decade that we went through before.
That's fantastically optimistic. The only, I'm a journalist, and we always try and see...
The argument is, of course, the politics.
Well, there's the politics, but what about the staff, though, Richard? The fact that so many of these people who I've been seen interviewed on television here, they've had 30 years service in NASA. They knew Gus Grissom. They knew Edgar Mitchell.
But Howard, they were running to the end of their useful professional life anyway.
Right.
they would have been retiring anyway. What we need to do is in the engineering schools and the best, you know, universities and the best technical training centers is to train a whole new generation of young engineers and scientists. And that's, of course, again, part of what Obama's doing with Pell Grants and all kinds of other heavy educational infrastructure, so that by the time we're ready, those people, those men and women who are training in school, will be ready to take up the cudgels as new engineers, a new generation, to boldly go, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, no, this looks kind of weird from the outside, but if you know the nuts and bolts and you understand the game changer which is on the horizon, I'm looking at some of these images now, you will know that the catalyst, the same kind of spur to do amazing things that hit the Kennedy generation, that created a whole generation of engineers that made Apollo successful, that's going to be ready when we're ready politically and financially to go beyond low Earth orbit and to tackle some of these astonishing discoveries that are just waiting to be born. And I'm looking at one of them on my computer screen right now.
All right. Now, I've just finished watching the Kennedy series over here. You probably got it months ago there. It was always said that JFK and his brother Bobby knew a great deal more about what was going on in space than they were ever able to divulge, and they have paid a price for that. Do you believe that Barack Obama similarly knows more than he is saying?
Yes. Remember, I documented Kennedy's knowledge in Dark Mission, you know, with Mike Barra. If you read Dark Mission, particularly the chapters on Kennedy and the genesis of Apollo, we now can prove, and I've actually gotten new information that I've laid out at a couple of conferences, we now know tonight, I can say categorically, that Kennedy knew there was something on the moon we had to go and get. And that was the real reason why we went to the moon, not to beat the Russians. How can I say that? Because just before he died, literally months before he died, Kennedy stood up at the UN, at the General Assembly, and basically invited publicly the Soviet Union to go to the moon with us. And he kept doing this from the day he walked into the Oval Office, we now know, from Ted Sorensen, who wrote a brilliant book that people should read called Counselor. And this fulfills the projections that we made in Dark Mission, that Kennedy had to have inside information as something incredibly important, not just to the U.S., but to the entire human family. And he kept at Khrushchev and kept at Khrushchev, and finally, in November, according to Khrushchev's surviving son, who is a professor here at Brown University, we now know on the record that Khrushchev accepted Kennedy's invitation, and 10 days later they murdered Kennedy, and a few months later they put Khrushchev under house arrest because that was not part of the plan. And you're absolutely right, Kennedy paid with his life for trying to do this. I think Obama is a lot smarter because he's had 40 years to think about, with the advice of people like Sorensen, what Kennedy did wrong. And I think in the next few months you're going to see Obama do some very brilliant things that are going to put manned space efforts back on the front burner, and will basically invite the entire world to go along to some astonishing new horizons that will make Gene Roddenberry's, you know, famous tagline, boldly going where no one has gone before, come absolutely true.
I remember Kennedy standing up and speaking. In fact, they've been repeating that on TV here a lot lately, saying, I choose to go to the moon because, not because it is easy, but because it is difficult. It seems to me, looking at it, that Barack Obama is imbued with the same kind of spirit. What do you think?
Well, I've got documentary data. In fact, that's some of the stuff I'm going to be presenting at the Exopolitics Conference in Leeds in just under a week. In fact, it's 1 week from today, Saturday, when we're doing this interview, but I'm going to be in Leeds speaking on Saturday evening for several hours, laying out the politics and the data that are putting us at the edge of an astonishing new era, because NASA is publishing this information. In fact, Monday, 2 days from now, they're going to have a major press conference at JPL in Pasadena, and they've rescheduled it. They originally had planned to hold it at 2 in the afternoon Eastern time, which is kind of late to get it on the network evening news. They rescheduled their press conference for noon Eastern time, which means they're definitely thinking they want to get on the evening news. And they didn't have a prayer with all this debt ceiling nonsense going on unless they have something truly amazing and revolutionary. So I think Monday you're going to hear something pretty interesting coming out of Washington.
All right. I know you can't, and it wouldn't be fair to ask you to tell me precisely what you're going to be saying at Leeds, but give me a taster.
Well, I'm going to be showing ruins, ancient ruins on this little asteroid Vesta, which is less than, well, on the order of 300 miles across. That's the size of Connecticut. It's probably the size of, you know, half the width of Britain or something like that. It's not a big object, but it is incredibly, amazingly interesting, and there are ruins all over the surface. Now, they're battered, they're smashed, they're ruins. They've been absolutely bombarded by meteors and small asteroids and stuff like that. But there's so much geometry, which, of course, is the rule of thumb. Carl Sagan gave us the rule of thumb decades ago in Cosmos when he said intelligent life on Earth first manifests itself in the geometric regularity of its constructions. Well, there's geometric regularity all over this damn object, and the only thing that produces that kind of regularity on this scale is intelligent manufacturing beings. So I'm going to knock their socks off in Leeds in a few days by showing the game changer that's going to change everything and usher the human race into a new age, the age that Kennedy envisioned but never lived to see.
Fantastic. Now, you were the man who talked about, of course, you know, I hesitate to go back there, but the face on Mars, which a lot of people derided at the time. And they said, well, look, if you look at it in one way, if you interpret it in this way, if you enhance it in that way, yeah, it looks like a face. But in other ways, it's just a natural structure. So it created enormous controversy. Do you anticipate more of the same?
Well, no, because we're not looking at anthropomorphic images. That's one of the hang-ups with the face on Mars. People can't get their mind around the idea that it could be a statue, because we have this child, you know, from birth till, you know, we're grown-ups, we recognize mommy. We're kind of programmed, hardwired in our brain to recognize faces. So there is a legitimate, you know, description of the possibility that the face on Mars could simply be a psychological projection. Now, we've gone light years beyond all that because of the geometry and the associated structures and the layout and the plans and the architectural mathematics and all that. But I can see where observers, honest observers, neutral observers could come to this initially thinking it was just a psychological projection. In the larger frame, Howard, the fact that we have ruins on Mars, we have ruins on the Moon, we have ruins, because you were with me at Leeds, in the rings of Saturn, we've got ruins on Mercury. Did I tell you that? No, I didn't have a chance.
You didn't.
Yes, there are ruins on Mercury discovered by the Messenger mission, the NASA Messenger mission. And there's ruins now on this little asteroid orbiting in the asteroid belt 2.5 times farther away from the Sun than the Earth. And NASA appears to be on the verge of announcing this because they're giving us crystal clear images as the Dawn spacecraft. Talk about a metaphor. Gets closer and closer and closer, and the images over the last several weeks have gotten better and better and better. And what we surmise might be there from the early fuzzy data is now crystal clear and sharp and unmistakable. And, you know, I always run my data past Robin, because Robin is kind of like your average person on the street when it comes to the sciences, the hard sciences. And she looks at this and she says, oh my, of course, there are ruins there. So if it passes the Robin test, I know that a whole bunch of people in Leeds in a week are going to absolutely be astounded by what they're going to see and what it implies both politically and technically and, most important, in terms of the future of the human race.
Amazing. You can't fool Robin. If it passes the Robin test, I know Robin too, then it must be pretty good. Now, the difficulty is here, though. If NASA present the images, they don't necessarily have to interpret them. Do you believe that this time they will interpret them?
Well, at some point they're going to have to, because if a whole bunch of scientists in the rest of the world look at these images on their websites and start dunning them with emails and questions, and I mean, even in this latest image, if you read the caption, they are admitting that they are baffled and at a loss to interpret what they're seeing. I think that there's one or two explanations. Either they really are knocked off their, you know, chairs by what they're seeing, because it doesn't fit any natural ballistic impact basaltic model they would bring out of the, you know, the textbooks in the laboratory, or it's a very clever political ploy to, as my intel friends used to say, give the public and the scientific community soak time to get them used to the idea that something unusual is going to be announced. Either model works, and we're going to know a lot more on Monday than we do tonight. And by the middle of the month, by the middle of August, as they begin this mission, they're going to be a lot closer. They're going to bring the spacecraft down in the initial survey orbits from the 3,000 miles they're currently in tonight as they approach to less than 1,700. Well, that right there is a factor of two. So things that are on the verge of visibility for ordinary people, people aren't experts at looking at this stuff, will pop off the screen. So by the time I get to Leeds, my God, I may have some astonishing new data, including what Chris Russell tantalized and teased people on the BBC a few days ago. He's the PI, the principal investigator of the mission. He talked about seeing very dramatic color changes on the surface of this body, something that they don't see on any other object. So the colors could be indicative of different composition materials. You know that steels and aluminum and concrete and all that has different intrinsic colors.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we could actually be seeing color images on Monday, which would make the geometry much clearer for people who are not used to looking at this. So I am coming to Leeds with all kinds of amazing things, and I would only urge people, come along and join an adventure that I think is just about to begin.
I found your work that you presented in Liverpool when I was there a couple of years ago, and also what you said about Phobos last year, fascinating. Unfortunately, both of those things came and seemed to go away in the greater public consciousness. Are you hoping that these will make a bigger impact?
They're kind of in the new sphere, which was a term that I think Thierry Chardin coined many, many years ago. Things don't go away. They are kind of sitting on a shelf. And when the culture gets to the point where it kind of gets it, they'll be brought off the shelf and they'll become front and center again. My job, as I envision it, is to salt this culture with this data so that by then we have the internet now. We have the technological newsphere where nothing is ever forgotten. Google is your friend. So as soon as people begin to ask questions, there's a huge database of work already done, polished, to be brought forward and presented on television, on the BBC, on Channel 4, on whatever media, you know, the internet that you can imagine. And the work has been done. The pioneering work has been accomplished. The foundation has been laid. And then we take the next step. I'm looking forward to it because the data I'm looking at right now on the screen is absolutely mind-boggling.
Why have you chosen to do this in the UK?
I was invited. Very simple.
All right. That's pretty straightforward. I'm just interested as to why you didn't book time.
Anthony's conference, Anthony Beckett, who's the guy putting this on, also is doing what he calls an exopolitical conference, which is the new definition of politics in an extraterrestrial sense. Since the pacing of all of this is governed by politics, and you cannot really have this adventure unless you get the politics in line, it seemed very appropriate to talk about the political revolution, which is giving us this data uncensored for the first time in my memory, at a conference devoted to the politics of how you bring this stuff out. So there is a kind of a meeting of the conference and the data, and we're going to have a lot of fun showing people things that are going to change, frankly, it's going to change their lives forever.
And the great thing about you, I will say, is that you are one of the greatest public speakers I have ever seen. I don't want to embarrass you here, Richard, but you are able to put together with your pictures a cogent argument, and you can speak without umming, erring, or deviating for 2 hours because you did it in Liverpool. It was more than 2 hours. So those people who are going to go and see you in Leeds, I recommend them to go, whatever they may think about all of this. They're going to have their socks knocked off simply by your presentation, for starters.
Well, they put me on Saturday night with nobody after me, so if we run a little long, you know, there's nobody to bump off the stage. When I was in Amsterdam a few months ago, poor Richard Dolan, who's also coming to the conference and presenting, he had to follow me. And that's not an enviable position because I mean, we went a bit long, and he wasn't really brought into the picture, and so he wondered if he was going to even have time. This time, the organizers have been much smarter, and I'm on in the evening after everyone else, so our runway is open.
All right. Summarize for me very briefly in soundbite terms, then, what you are going to present to people in Leeds.
Well, I'm going to present a revolution. What we have needed for the last 40 years to galvanize the real space program is a game changer, something that is so dramatic, so shattering, so mind-boggling that it puts all the politics and funding concerns and technology problems into a context to where we simply use what we have achieved technologically over the last 40 years, we put the hardware together, and we go. And if I'm right, if I'm reading the political tea leaves correctly, the best emission, which NASA has very appropriately called Dawn, I believe is that mission, which in the next few months is going to change the space equation totally, and it's because Barack Obama is not a laggard when it comes to politics. Remember what he said on April 15th of last year when he canceled Bush's efforts, very lame efforts, because they were totally underfunded to go back to the moon? He said the next mission should be to an asteroid. I believe he had this place in mind.
Wow. That's the only word I have about that. Listen, there is one issue I have to tackle, and I know your time is limited, so we need to tackle it now if you don't mind. I will get emails from my listeners saying, why didn't you ask him about this? I've already had the emails. Last year we talked about Phobos, I had you on, then I had Olivier Vitas from the European Space Agency on to say that everything you'd said basically was, in the nicest possible way, wrong. Just in a couple of minutes, your response to that.
Well, I think, again, ESA is very carefully constrained politically into what they could admit and what they can say. That was then and this is now. That was premature. The word had not been given to disclose, but there's been a huge number of data points, both in your media and in ours, everything from Stephen Hawking talking about, you know, aliens coming, to the Pope, you know, willing to baptize aliens, to the Royal Society talking about aliens and ET in our midst. I mean, you put all these things together, you look across the pond at our place, at what Obama's doing in Washington, at NASA, with these astonishing images of this new place, and it only tells me that, yes, we're on track for some astonishing revelations. Remember, this year, in 2011, in November, a few months from now, we have two new unmanned missions, flagship missions, which are going to go to two places that have the extraordinary potential to blow the whole doors off this whole ET problem. One is the Russian mission, which is the Phobos Grunt mission to Phobos, which will land on Phobos.
Uh-huh.
It has a little robot. It can go inside. It is to the Russians that will be bequeathed the possibility of showing the world the artificial nature, the ancient spaceship nature of this moon of Mars called Phobos. At the same time, in the same launch window, landing on Mars in the same time frame, we have an unmanned spacecraft the size of a small car, like a mini, maybe, which is going to drive around Mars. It's going now to a place called Gale Crater. It is called Curiosity. It carries on it technology and instrumentation, which for the first time can actually find and detect life on Mars since the Viking missions back in the 1970s. All of these timings, all of these separate agendas have been carefully coordinated to all come to a crescendo together, because I think, Howard, it's time. I think disclosure is underway, and all we have to do is watch with bated breath to see the next astonishing data that's going to be presented and will unfold on our TV screens.
A couple of years ago in Liverpool, I remember doing an interview with one of the speakers there who said to me that disclosure was imminent. It hasn't happened yet. Do you believe we're knocking on the door now?
Yeah, Steve Bassett. Steve is
That's
presenting
right.
at the Leeds Conference. It's going to be a kind of a reunion of old friends and colleagues. And this time, when Steve says disclosure is around the corner, I'm going to agree with him because I'm looking at data on this screen right now, which tells me it's almost here.
This is a good time to be alive, then.
It's the best. The best time ever. You know that old song, was the best of times, the worst of times?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's in our hands to make it the best of times, and with this data, I think we can do it.
Well, listen, I wish you a wonderful conference in Leeds. It'll be marvellous to welcome you back to the UK, Dick. It is, 2 years since you've been here now, obviously, since that conference in Liverpool. So a few things have changed in the UK. Leeds is a very different city from Liverpool, but it is very modern and forward-looking. And the nice thing about people there in Yorkshire is they are very open and amenable to new ideas. Also, they are very warm and hospitable. So you're going to enjoy it, I think.
Well, I'm looking forward to it. I wish you could drop by, but apparently you've got other problems and schedules. And commitments.
Listen, one of these days we'll talk about that.
we're going to be in the UK for about a week, so hopefully we'll run into each other at some point.
I hope so. Either that or I'm going to have to get on that plane and come to the US and we'll do this. It'd be nice to see you again, both of you.
That would be great, too.
All right, Dick. Listen, thank you very much. Go well, go safely, both of you, and have a good time here in the UK.
You might check out the website. The Leeds Conference is exopolitics-leeds.co.uk. So if you want tickets, I think there's still a few available. And again, I'm really looking forward to it because it's the right time and the right place, the right audience, and boy, have we got the right data.
Kind of sounds it. Plug your website too.
EnterpriseMission.com. And I have a Facebook page, which has got 20-some thousand followers or fans, whatever they call them. So you might come over there and join the conversation.
Richard, good to talk to you. Thank you very much.
Same here, Howard. Take care. We'll talk soon.
Always fascinating, always controversial, Richard C. Hoagland, American space expert. Check out the link to his site here at www.theunexplained.tv. That's www.theunexplained.tv. Designed by Adam Cornwell at Creative Hotspot in Liverpool, as ever. Thank you very much for supporting me and this show. Please keep that support coming. My name is Howard Hughes. We will return soon with another edition of The Unexplained.